It's Friday morning, and once again, another edition, number 40, believe it or not, of the Zogby Report, Real and Unscripted. I'm here, I'm John, and I'm here today with my son, Jer. Good morning, Jer. How are you?
Good morning, Dad. Number 40 has some pretty big significance, doesn't it?
It sure does. There's an awful lot to talk about, and we're going to be very calm, aren't we? And very deliberate, as we always are. But we've got a lot to talk about, and some of it's politics, of course, and polling, and some of it is, about the short-term future of the nation. So why don't I kick it off? So a lot has happened. There was the first presidential debate, and then the president being hospitalized, and then unhospitalized, and questions about the president's very behavior, to the point where he's refusing to debate. Joe Biden is saying that he'll use that time to do a town meeting with one of the networks. And the president is heard coughing on Fox News during an interview. And Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, forming a special commission, are wanting to anyway, to look into the president's behavior to see if the 25th Amendment can in some way be activated. But with all of that said, let's look at where the race is. Most of the polls, well, every poll has Joe Biden leading nationally. We're on the low end with Zogby Strategies. We have a 2-point race after the first debate and hospitalization, all the way up to a CNN poll that has it as a 16-point race. And I just wanted to take a moment to explain the differences. And these are not new. I have found myself in this kind of outlier position many times. And essentially, it's the way we draw our sample. You want to be sure that everybody has the same chance as everybody else to be selected. So it's random and probability sampling. But secondly, you want to be sure to the degree that you can in your assumption that the sample model that you're using reflects the reality of what the turnout on election day will look like. And so as we've looked over the last few years, particularly in 2016, and looked at the number in the sample that identify themselves as Democrats, and those who say they're Republicans, those who say they're independents, is generally a 4 to 5 point differential. There are more Democrats than there are Republicans, but to the tune of 38-39% Democrat to 33-35% Republican, that's what we use. We use a 38% Democrat, 34% Republican model. So we believe that that's a more accurate reflection of the turnout model, given the fact that Joe Biden is getting 91% support among Democrats, Donald Trump 94% among Republicans, and that's the independents then who are close to tied. We feel like we have an accurate reflection of what's going on, that this is a closer race. Now, some of the polls that have come out have found to be troubling. The CNN poll has only 25% Republicans in its sample. Fox News poll that just came out and a YouGov poll, they poll for The Economist, have come out. They've had a 15-point differential between the 44% Republicans in their sample, Democrats in their sample, and the 28 or 29% Republicans. I could go on and on, but I won't. Every other pollster that has a double-digit lead is simply because of an oversampling of Democrats and an undersampling of Republicans. Now, I will yield to no one on this. I am a Democrat. Quite frankly, I've never hidden that fact. I just don't think that the sampling is accurate. Now, we're going to have at least one more poll before the election. We'll test this again. But even though those who support Joe Biden feel very comfortable in seeing these huge double-digit leads, I'm still saying be very, very careful. You don't want to trip up as a lot of pundits did in 2016. So I'm not ascribing any negative implications towards my colleagues at all. I'm not saying that there's any manipulation going on here. I've been through this for three decades now, since the gubernatorial election in 1994 here in New York. I just think that there is some imperfect sampling going on out there. It remains to be seen what will happen. What do you think, Chair?
Well, I think it's okay if colleagues criticize each other. I mean, certainly our name hasn't been an exception in terms of some criticism over the years, particularly because of the use of online. But I mean, I we won't even get into that. All one needs to know is that regarding connection in this country, over 90% of the population is connected to online. And then ask yourself who has a landline these days. But you know, I digress. But my question to you is, and I think it's okay if we criticize as long as it's constructive. But clearly, they're waiting for party much higher. And what is that based on?
That's a very good question. Many of them claim, in fact, almost all of the more traditional pollsters claim that they're not applying a weight for party, but that's how their sample comes out. When we look at our data as it initially comes in with no weighting whatsoever, you know, no weighting for to bump up the underrepresented young people or underrepresented non-whites, just the raw data that comes in, we never get a 9 or 10 or 15 point difference between the number of Democrats and Republicans in the sample.
Exactly.
In fact, quite honestly, our unweighted data had 40% Democrats, 35% Republicans. We weighted it down to 38 and 34 to more reflect, previous election turnout. So, I'm not going to insinuate anything about our colleagues, except I just don't understand how they get the results that they do.
Well, it's to me, it's only two things. It's either deliberate or it's a projection of bias. And I would go with the latter. I'm comfortable in saying that, if you live in an area and you're in an echo chamber, and most of your friends think a certain way, a lot of times the echo chamber effect is that you tend to project, how could people be think such a certain way? Clearly, for example, the president is out of his mind and he's bad for this country. He's bad for the world. So, of course, people are going to turn out in droves for Biden. I'm afraid that that's what's happening, a projection of bias in the data.
And you are welcome to do that. I'm not going to go that far, but the sure. impact is the same. The impact is still the same. And rather than go on and on about that, let's just talk about the state of the election and the country. Obviously, the most, I would say, terrifying and even more so than troubling thing is that I think we live in a country where majorities don't matter anymore. Intensities do. So it really makes no difference who has a majority in Congress or who has a majority support in the polls. things are going to be driven more by the loudest voices on both sides. That, to me, is where we were as a country in the 1850s and early 1860s. And we saw how that turned out. Now, our polling shows, and you've written about this in the Intelligencer, that the majority of both sides, Democrats and Republicans, in our polls say, yes, I will accept the results of the election, even if my guy doesn't win. But it's the 20 to 25% who say, no, I will not. And the even more who say, I probably will not accept those results, that are particularly troubling. They're the ones that go out in the streets. They're the ones that are endlessly on social media. They're the ones who will fold their arms across their chest and say, hell no. And if we have that kind of a situation, then all we have starting November 3rd and until God knows how long is trouble. We've always been fortunate, whether it was 1876 or 2000 or 2004 for that matter, 2016, where someone who could make a claim for a recount or make a claim that they actually did win a certain state and hence the Electoral College ultimately backed down. I don't know that I see either candidate backing down this year. And that worries me an awful lot, the implications.
I would have to agree with that. Our data has shown consistently that it's an irate, tiny minority that claim that they won't accept the results. The latest issue of the Intelligencer that came out the other day, issue 9, tried to take a completely different approach. There's been a lot of talk in trends and in the news about division and a lack of trust. And so what we wanted to know is, to what degree could there be a common ground? And so, interestingly, and by the way, this is the optimistic side of the discussion, that when we asked all of the polling respondents what their top two issues were, actually we gave them a list of 12 and we asked for their top two, but just by averages of ranking them out, looking at the overall population, there's the top three issues are COVID, healthcare, and jobs in the economy. Now you look at the breakdown by party, look at it by Democrats, Republicans, and independents, and the same thing. Their top three issues are those same three issues as overall American likely voters. So you see that people's priorities are in alignment. And so you take it further and we ask, well, would you be willing to concede to the other party on one of your top issues in order for another of the top issues to move forward? You know, you basically have your way with that issue, but give up another issue to the other side. And whether it was Democrats or Republicans, about 4 in 10 on either side said that they were willing to do that. And so then we went to the next level to figure out, well, where could people really get behind something so that there would be a supermajority across party line? And we asked about reforms like term limits for Congress and for senators, and it, another reform, getting corporate PAC money altogether, big money, out of elections and campaigns. And it was like 85% for every party, for both sides of the aisle that could get behind that. And so I think there's also reason to think that we're kind of brewing. I mean, we talked about this before with the Constitutional Convention 2.0, and we saw that there was a strong majority that were interested in something like that, having to rethink our system of governance. And so The point is that unfortunately, the leadership at both parties do have that tendency, especially in light of 2016 and 2020, to bring out the worst in a smaller sliver of the population. But most people still, I think, are on board for real change. It's just, you know, what's it going to come down to? Are we going to have this real change through the parties, through the Democrats and the Republicans, through our elected officials? Or is this going to have to be really driven in the sense of a spirited revolution? And I'll stop there and turn the mic over to you, Dad, see what you think about that.
Well, that's the big question, isn't it? You know, what is it going to take? I think, actually, as you point out, there can be consensus points on issues that need to be reformed, disagreements over specifics. But I think we have two warring cultures in the country right now. It used to be not so long ago that, you know, things could be hotly contested in the districts, but, you know, congressmen had to go back and appeal to a majority of voters and then represent the district, go back to Washington, but also be part of their partisan caucus, which meant they would be rewarded for a whole different set of skills, the go along, get along with my party, than the set of skills that they needed to appeal exclusively to the majority in their districts. Now, it's one of those things where both sides are dug in. Both sides in Washington just don't communicate with each other. And our districts are gerrymandered in such a way that an overwhelming majority of these House districts include my party. That's what they were written for. And so, you know, there are many people elected to Congress who don't have to go beyond their own base, don't even have to acknowledge the other side in order to be reelected. And then know full well that when they go to Washington, all they have to do is be bound by the wishes of their party leadership. There's no incentive to cross the aisle, to compromise. I mean, so much so to the point that we've had government shutdowns, record numbers over the last 25, 28 years, shutdowns of the government. Here we have millions of people dependent on Social Security and on jobs and other entitlements and benefits, and the government can't print checks because Congress is in an ideological battle of some sort. There is going to be a reckoning. November 3rd may very well be that reckoning. Whether that's a breaking point or not is what really troubles me. I'm not going to predict anything, but it's hard for me to see the nation being bound, you know, or bonded together, or anyone emerging as a unifier. It won't be the third. All the votes will not have been counted by then. But I truly do not see Donald Trump relinquishing office easily. And for that matter, I think there'll be an enormous amount of pressure on Joe Biden if there are questions about the counted ballots. I don't see the Democrats backing down either. And that, in the short and medium term, does not bode well for the health of the government. The people will be all right. It's the government that we're talking about.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty spot on, and our data supports the outcome. I know you said that you didn't want to forecast, but the outcome you laid out, it sounds like a forecast, but even more so, our numbers support that outcome, because when we asked voters in this most recent poll, for example, are you, come election day, are you voting mail-in, absentee, or in person? For those who are going to vote for Trump, by and large, it's about 6 of 10 say they're voting in person, And on the flip side, folks who say they're voting for Biden, about the same, 6 in 10, say that they're voting by mail-in and or absentee. And so what it sounds like is the Republicans and Trump, election night or the day after, are going to be quick to declare the victory because of the heavy amount of Trump voters that will show up at the polls that day. And then all of the confusion while we wait for the ballots and the mail-ins to come in, and who knows, you know, what kind of mess. We're already starting to see the glimpse of that. So it does look to be a long, drawn-out battle with Republicans claiming as early as they can that they won, trying to force the narrative through, and the Democrats to cry all sorts of foul play. And that looks about where it's all headed.
Yeah, not a happy note to leave on, but let's try to see what we can conjure up through this week, make our report a whole lot happier. You know, you've been talking about an October surprise. There have already been four, and probably 12 more to go. So, but we'll stay on top of it. And we thank everybody for listening and sharing and sending in some comments here and there. And have a wonderful week. I'll see you, Jer.
Yep, take care.